Welcome to the Top 5 Podcast with your hosts, Rail Bricker and Lindsay Adams.
Welcome back. Our special guest today is John Foster. John comes to us today from Baton Rouge in Louisiana in the deep south. John is an education innovator. He received his BS in chemical engineering and an MBA from LSU, spent 30 plus years in industry. Along the way, he volunteered for Junior Achievement and through these classroom experiences developed the middle school MBA curriculum. His industrial career failed its way through process engineering, plant operations, business management, M&A and corporate strategy, and finally failing big enough to exit. Sounds good. His goal now is to teach kids the lowdown on business, economics and entrepreneurship in the hope that they might fail bigger and sooner. Interests include angel investing, swimming, cycling, horses, dogs and guitar. Welcome, John. Great to have you with us.
Thank you so much, guys. It's great to be here.
It's an interesting bio when you talk about failing, yet I get it. So, John, you're here today to talk to us about the top five tips for making your kids savvy. We haven't done a topic like this before, so I'm really interested to hear what you've got to say. So let's get going. Tip number one, what have you got for us?
So tip number one is again about failure, that failure's not fatal. It's really essential. But maybe we should, before that, we should back up one step and talk about why should we make our kids savvy and what does that mean? And to me, you know, savvy is understanding the world around you and being able to function in it capably. It's sort of the opposite of being naive and helpless. And, you know, in this is, we live in this big commercial universe. There's all around us every day. There's all sorts of transactions. We're buying things and using things and interacting with people that way. But for kids, this is like just a chaotic bunch of one-off things that happen. You know, it's like being in a Star Wars blaster fight. There's just these little things shooting all over the place, and you can't make heads or tails of it. And what we do with kids is we don't teach them what this is about, and we don't prepare them for what they're going to fall into. It's kind of like we take them to Mars on a spaceship. Along the way, we don't tell them anything about the atmosphere on Mars or the gravity. And we just arrive and open the door and say, hop out and have a good time.
Off you go.
You know, I mean, it's crazy, right? But so what we want to do is prepare kids to know what this world is about and be able to enter it in a confident and successful way. So the first tip is they need to understand that failure is going to happen. It's not going to kill you. And in fact, you should see it as a necessary stepping stone to success. And I know everybody's heard this before. It's not whether you fall down, it's whether you get up and embrace failure and all that. But it's very hard to do. You know, failure doesn't feel good and nobody likes it. So you actually have to deliberately think about that and set your mind toward that. And on all these things, if you want to see this in your kids, you should adopt it yourself. They need to see it in their parents. So, you know, in embracing failure, a sense of humor helps a lot. Not taking yourself too seriously helps. Anticipating potential failures and how you're going to react to those ahead of time. That helps to have your mindset in the right place.
So mindset and everything else, but our kids of today, of the 2020 somethings, okay, live in Google time and Siri time, where every instant of their life is on, you know, Instagram probably. And are they setting themselves up for more failure because of opinion?
Well, what I would say is, you know, in the time that they're not spending on the web, they're in a classroom, and the in classrooms, there's this idea. I had a parent, a principal rather, came to me and said, "John, you guys are setting these kids up for failure, not setting them up for success." And I said, "I know. I want them to fail now. I want them to do it now while it's cheap." In the classroom, there's this ethos of we have to make it easy for them to succeed. We want them to stumble into success, whether they manage to do it or not. And that's a very dangerous way to send them out into the world. So I would say, yeah, I have lots of problems with Instagram and the instant success or fail or whatever you're getting there, the instant nature of it. But I think there's still a lot of time in the classroom and a lot of time with the parents where they really can learn these lessons in a really strong way.
So, John, have you got any tips for, when you do fail, you talked about it needn't crush you, but, for a kid, that it kind of hurts, doesn't it? And you got any tips for them how to get back up and go again?
Well, yeah, there's a few things. It hurts everybody. First of all, just recognize that.
Well, true, yeah.
Life is tough. Your kid should expect life to be tough, and so if you set that expectation and then try to set them up to fail small. They've already failed small a lot. When they were a toddler, they fell down and they had to get back up. So just everywhere you can, let them fail, let them see the failure and tell them this is normal and this is life. And you just take the next step forward and keep going.
Okay. So we've agreed that failure isn't fatal. It's essential for success. Hit us up. Tip number two.
So tip number two is you need a future focus. Time is always moving forward. Tomorrow is going to come whether you want it to or not. And so you need to be aware of that and you need to plan for it. That means, you would like to develop a longer time preference. There's the famous study where they give a kid a candy bar and say, okay, you can eat this now or you can save it till tomorrow. And tomorrow we'll give you two candy bars if you wait. And then they follow up with those kids. Some ate the candy bar right away, some waited. But they followed up on the kids who waited for years and years, and they had a much higher percentage of success throughout their life because of this little bit longer time preference. And that's something that you can cultivate, that by understanding that, and I'm sure the, our internet culture works against that because, again, everything's instant. But the sun does rise again tomorrow, and you have to confront your future given what you've done today. And so just in inculcating that future awareness so that you're preparing to live your future self in that future world, and you're anticipating, you're expecting that it's going to be different today. So change doesn't derail you. It's like natural. You understand that.
Okay. So given this time awareness and this future, I mean, are kids actually, and looking at a longer, I end up doing a number of finance talks for schools because of an obligation as a fellow of the mortgage and finance industry in Australia. And when I talk about, medium-term goals, medium-term is a month. It's not a year or 3 years. How are we dealing with that time awareness when medium-term is in our adult minds very short-term?
Well, I'll tell you a story. One of the activities that we do with kids is we have them make a business card, think about what would I like to do with my life, and then make a business card that reflects that occupation. And then they introduce themselves to each other and practice that aspect of things. But I had, so as a result of that, I have business cards that are several years old that the kids have made These are like kids are 12 years old. And I have one from a kid who said he's going to be an engineer. Today, he's a senior in chemical engineering at a university.
Wow.
I have one where the girl says she's going to be a vet. She's a vet today. I have one from a little girl who says she's going to be an astronaut. And this girl is at NASA today. She's at NASA. You can look up her Wikipedia page. So, okay, they're 12, but you'd be amazed at how far ahead many of them are thinking and where their dreams can go. What we do is we try to show them a roadmap of this is what the world is like out there, and here's what you need to step into it and take whatever place it is that you're interested in.
John, I want to share a story. I've got four grandchildren. My eldest grandson is 7. He started grade 2 this year. And, on day one back at school, my daughter took a photo. He's holding up a little plaque and, you know, my name is, and I'm studying in grade 2 and I want to be, and he said he wanted to be a McDonald's worker, wants to work in a McDonald's store. He's aiming really high. But he's...
Look, there is no bad work. You know, there's no bad job.
There's a space for everyone and everyone has a place. So I love it. Anyway, well, it'll be interesting to see what his projection is or what his goal is next year. Hey, all right. Well, let's move on now. Tip number three
revolves around the fact that people are social animals, and thus business is a social endeavor. It's about people working together and making deals and making promises and fulfilling promises, but it involves other people. And we know that people want to do business with somebody else that they know, like, and trust. And so as a result, what you need to do to function well in this world is to be open and knowable and be likable and be trustworthy.
Yeah.
So those are great character traits to try to develop in yourself. And the other thing that we tell people is that, okay, so you need to know these other people. And guess what? They already want to know you. You know, and instead of being afraid to introduce yourself to somebody, just recognize that actually, even if you're like an introvert like me, and even if the person you're meeting is an introvert, they appreciate you extending a hand to them and saying, "Hi, I'm Joe. Nice to meet you." And it's just that, you know, the fact that you have two people who are unsure of that keep them from meeting one another. So to explicitly know that other people want to meet you and you want to meet them is an important thing to understand. And then to have the simple skills of just saying, "Hi, I'm John. Nice to meet you. What do you do?" is just particularly today, it's critically important. You know, if you see kids today, you might pass them out on a hiking trail and maybe they're staring down at their phone or maybe they're not looking at their phone, but they don't look at you. This skill of looking another person in the eye and saying hello, you know, or just nodding at them as you pass by is really disappearing. And that's if you don't have that, it's an enormous barrier to you meeting other people and creating relationships.
I think, you know, the issue you raise about mobile phones is an interesting one. And I cringe at the, you know, when you go into public places and you see people staring at their phones, not talking to each other. So I think that's a real hurdle for kids of this day and age to jump over and actually
huge.
To look someone in the eye and say hello.
Yes, it's huge. And we do a lot of exercises where kids do exactly that. You know, I told you about making a business card and introducing themselves, and then they make a CRM and so that they can, that's a customer relationship manager. They make their own simple Rolodex, if you will, with all these other kids in the class. And in the process of doing all that, they learn these. We even have some drills where they move counter current in a circle, in two concentric circles, and introduce themselves to each person under different circumstances. Like, okay, now this is a business associate. Now this is a complete stranger. Here's a personal friend. You know, how do you greet them? What's different about the way you greet them and how you interact with them? And, you know, again, these are skills that they're sort of lost on them today, but they're not that hard to learn with a little practice. And what you find is that when they have these skills, they go out and they use them and they get rewarded for them. They're like the coolest kid, you know, because everybody else is staring at their phone. And so it's sort of a self-reinforcing thing. Once you give them this skill, they take it out and use it and own it.
That's fantastic. I mean, I've seen my son, you know, walk up to people and just go, "Hi, I'm whatever." And he's got that confidence and skill to be able to do that in any setting. And it's quite fascinating to watch him. So, John,
and it essentially never fails, right?
Yeah. Everyone
never fails.
And back. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Hit us up. Tip number four for making your kids savvy.
Tip number four is don't make an enemy on the way to making a deal. Again, this is an interpersonal relationship thing. But one of the things that we teach is negotiating. We teach a formal negotiating. What's the structure of a negotiation? And then what are the tactics within that structure? And one of the things we also teach a lot of ethics along the way. And so one of the things we teach them is, okay, you're going to negotiate with this opponent, but once you make a deal, now you're going to have to execute that deal potentially with that same person. So you better not make an enemy on the way to making your deal. You want to drive the best deal you can, but you have to do it with the idea of, I don't want this other person to hate me. I'm looking for a win-win. I just want the win-win to my favor. I still want this other person to also win. So the idea is you want to be able to meet people. You want them to know and like you. You want to be able to negotiate some sort of a deal with them in which you both come out happy and wanting to do another deal. So the tip is, don't make an enemy on the way to making a deal.
I think that's a critical piece of advice. Okay, let's move on. Tip number five, our final tip in the top five on how to make your kids savvy.
Number five, again, relates to negotiating, or negotiating is the vehicle that we use to teach it. And that is, your next best option is your backstop and your launch pad. So when you go into a negotiation, you have some sort of next best option. And if you fail to make a deal, then that's what you have. You fall back to your next best option. And it doesn't matter if the person on the other side of you is, you know, the president of the world or twice your size, or it doesn't matter. Your next best option is your protection. They can't push you past that. And so the next best option is your backstop, number one. And then number two, the next thing you ask is, well, where does my next best option come from? And that comes from the work that you put in before the negotiation in order to build that next best option. So your next best option is your responsibility. It comes from the work you did prior to the negotiation. And then if you negotiate something better, now that's your next best option for the next negotiation. So these are stepping stones for you to continue to move forward. So next best options are crucial. And the good news is, much of it is in your own hands.
How do you identify the options?
So we start super simple. We have a scenario. You'd like a new bicycle. You can get one at Walmart for $25, but there's a kid down the street that is selling his bike, and maybe you can do better. So your next best option is going to be $25 at Walmart, but maybe you can get it for $15 from this kid down the street. But even if he's like, you know, no matter who he is, he can't force you to pay him $30 for the bike because you have a next best option at $25. So that's a very simple example. And then we make them more and more complex and complicated. So it's like they're working a word problem where they look, read through the scenario, and then they have to identify, if this negotiation fails, what am I left with? That's your next best option. And then you've got X amount of time to try to make a deal, and either you make a deal or not. But again, your next best option is always your backstop.
Okay, fantastic, John. I mean, that's the first time we've looked at a topic like this in 250 plus episodes. So, I mean, that's been enlightening and it's made us savvy as well, not only just the top five tips for making your kids savvy. If our listeners want to get hold of you and find out more about the middle school MBA curriculum, how do they get hold of you? What's the best contact method?
So all of our stuff is at middleschoolmba.com, and there are sample lessons and just everything that you could want. And there are links there where you can contact me directly if you'd like to. So middleschoolmba.com is your one-stop shopping.
Fantastic. John Foster from Baton Rouge in Louisiana. Thank you for joining Lindsay Adams from Brisbane, Australia, and myself, Rail Bricker from Perth, Western Australia, for another edition of the Top 5 podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was a joy.